Support for the New Hampshire News Recap comes from you, our listeners, and from CASA of New Hampshire, seeking volunteer advocates for children and youth who have experienced abuse and neglect, helping make a difference for local children. New training options start soon. A child's road to safety starts here. Learn more at casanh.org.
This is Morning Edition on NHPR. I'm Rick Ganley, and this is the New Hampshire News Recap. Although the Northeast has some of the highest electricity prices in the country, Granite Staters are facing a jump of between about $6 and $18 in their monthly electricity bills starting in about a week on August 1st. NHPR reporter Kate Dario is here to give us some background on this and perhaps some tips to help mitigate the impact on your budget. Morning, Kate.
Morning, Rick.
So, Kate, why are prices going up?
Yep, there are three key reasons. Okay, first, this winter was particularly harsh. Two, there's been ongoing instability in the Middle East with the ongoing war with Iran. And the third reason is a new mechanism implemented by state regulators telling utilities how to set their rates in this new way.
Okay, so what is that new mechanism?
Okay, so before this new mechanism went into place in about February of 2025, utilities used to buy 100% of the energy for their consumers at one flat rate, but the Public Utilities Commission changed that. So under the new rules, only half of the energy that utilities purchase is purchased at a fixed rate, and the other half is purchased in IOS New England's daily spot market. So this really changed how utilities calculate supply rates. That's the part of your energy bill that refers to the actual amount of energy you use. Basically, now they have to guess what they think prices will be in the spot market for the next 6 months, and that means they can get it wrong.
Okay, so companies made estimates in the spot market that came up short?
Yeah, exactly. So again, going back to the war with Iran and the particularly cold winter, utilities didn't guess that. So the rates that they were charging were basically artificially low. So they came up millions of dollars short in the marketplace. For Unitil, that was about $3 million. For Liberty, it was $9 million. And for Eversource, the state's largest electricity supplier, it was $38 million. So the rates that are going into effect on August 1st, they're designed to recoup these losses. I know this can be a little bit confusing, so I found this analogy from the state's consumer advocate, Don Kreese, to be really helpful to explain basically what's happening here and why he thinks it doesn't really work.
When you buy your granola at the food co-op, you don't want to pay an extra charge to cover the cost of providing granola to people who ate it last year. I mean, imagine if the co-op or the supermarket said, well, we're going to have to charge you an extra dollar for that granola because we didn't charge last year's customers enough money. That's not the way this is supposed to work.
Interesting analogy, Kate. What was the goal of using the spot market in this way?
Yeah, an advocate I spoke with told me basically this was, quote, a well-intentioned mistake from the PUC. If you remember, after the start of the war in Ukraine in 2022, prices in global energy markets soared, and it was really hard for consumers. So the PUC thought perhaps adopting this model would be a way to cut costs, but that has not been what's happened.
So if we're going to be paying to offset losses in the short term from unanticipated events like a cold winter or a disruption in the Strait of Hormuz, are we setting the table for future volatility and, you know, unanticipated price hikes?
Yeah, basically that's what a lot of people I spoke with seem to think. I mean, think about it. You might be getting a price for 6 months that is lower than it actually than the marketplace would dictate. So then you're hit with this large charge that you have to then make up 6 months later. And also because this is a new mechanism, advocates said utilities are just inexperienced at doing this, and that might be why they're missing the mark. This is Joe LaRusso, who oversees the Acadia Center Clean Grid Program.
You know, if utilities are required to buy half of the power that they're delivering to their customers in this variable market, they're really taking a bet on the weather, because if we have a bout of extreme weather, then we're going to have extremely high energy prices.
Kate, does it work in reverse? I mean, if the spot market pays off for energy companies, will consumers, you know, see that reflected in their bills?
Yes, that's important to remember, that if they overestimate how expensive they think a six-month period is going to be, people would then have lower rates the next 6 months. That's something that utilities underscored, that people would get that money back reflected through the new rates that the utilities would set.
Okay, well, I guess in the meantime, we can, you know, take some measures to kind of reduce our electricity usage. Like, I don't know, raising the temperature on the AC a little bit. Can consumers shop around for better rates too?
Yeah, consumers looking for additional options can choose from other competitive energy suppliers that provide alternatives. There's a lot of resources on the Department of Energy's website that is helpful for comparing different prices and seeing what services might be available to you. But just remember that options across the board are increasing. It's a really tough time for energy markets right now.
Okay, so shopping around may or may not help you.
Exactly.
Okay, well, in the meantime, I guess just keep telling the kids to turn the lights off and leave the room.
Exactly.
That's what I do anyway. NHPR's Kate Dario, thank you.
Thanks, Rick.
This is the New Hampshire News Recap from NHPR. I'm Rick Ganley. When a loved one has a medical crisis and is unconscious, it falls to a loved one to make medical decisions for them. But that person might not know what kind of care they would want. That's why a team of doctors and social workers in Cheshire County are pushing for more people to complete advance directives. Those are legal documents laying out their health care wishes. And as NHPR's Jackie Harris tells us, they're helping people get them done on the spot.
On a hot July day, a group of Cheshire Medical Center patients are sitting in an air-conditioned conference room at the hospital. They're all mostly over 50 years old, and they're here for a presentation on advance directives, plus the free pizza that comes with it. Two doctors leading the presentation, Yusuf Amer and Kathy Schumann, start by asking what kind of health care the attendees would want at the end of their life. A few people raise their hands.
I want to make sure that I'm going to have some type of quality of life. Mm-hmm. If I'm not, then I don't want to be hanging around.
Okay. That kind of wish is something you can put in your advance directive. The document has two parts, a living will that lays out what kind of care you'd like to receive or refuse, and who should make decisions for you if you're incapacitated, sometimes called a healthcare proxy. For example, a terminal cancer patient might say they don't want CPR because they don't want to risk broken ribs or injured organs. Or they could request the opposite, that doctors use all possible medical interventions to extend their life. Dr. Amer said he's been shocked by how many patients come into his office or the ER without having any care preference documented.
They're in the moment of crisis, and like we kind of need to know what their wishes are and who would they want if things kind of go south to make those decisions for them.
In a 2016 survey, 85% of American respondents said that when thinking about their own death, it was deeply important to them that their wishes for medical care be followed. But only about one-third of U.S. adults have put those wishes down in writing with an advance directive. This is Dr. Kathy Schumann, Dr. Amer's mentor during his family medicine residency.
People tend to avoid these discussions because it's hard to think about dying. It's hard to think about when you're 18 that you might not be around. Or even when you're 65, it's still hard to think about you might not be around.
She and Dr. Amer are trying to make thinking about that a little easier by teaching people about advance directives and helping them create their own at the same time. They've teamed up with Home Healthcare, Hospice, and Community Services, HCS for short. They hold these sessions across southwestern New Hampshire at the hospital, in nursing homes, and community centers. Lori Wilcox works with HCS and is one of the witnesses at today's event.
So I did my advance directive, I believe it was in April, literally in this room. I had one in Connecticut. I didn't realize that when I relocated that it didn't transfer. I learned all that information right here in this room.
So were you sitting here and you were like,
that's exactly what happened. My mind was like, what? I need to sign this now.
She also decided to update it with even more details for her kids.
I lost a husband in 2016, and I made a promise to my children that I would do everything possible, since I was the last living parent that they had, to be in a good way for them outward from here. And the fact that I didn't have this, learning all that information, was mind-blowing to me.
Elizabeth Lent and her uncle, Paul Daly, go over the forms together. He's 75, and he's asked her to be his healthcare proxy.
Who knows, I might be dead tomorrow. So I want it to be easy for my relatives.
Elizabeth has had experience with advance directives before.
My mother was on life support, and it was really helpful to see her initial next to kind of what she wanted, and it definitely took the burden of decision-making off my plate, which was really helpful.
They sign their names on the forms, and two HCS employees do the same, making it a legal document. It'll go into his electronic health record. And now, both Paul and his niece know what he wants at the end. Jackie Harris, NHPR News.
The Boston Red Sox winning streak came to an end this week after the team tied a franchise record at 15 straight victories. That streak matches the 1946 Red Sox, a team that had a guy named Ted Williams on it. They play the Blue Jays tonight at Fenway. But there's a new league in town, a women's professional baseball league that'll take the field in the United States for the first time in more than 70 years. And we've got Beth Greenwood, future catcher for the Boston Hunters, on the phone to tell us more about that league. Good morning, Beth.
Good morning. How's it going?
I'm doing fine. You're a native. You grew up playing baseball in New Hampshire.
Yeah, I grew up in Amherst, New Hampshire, and kind of spent my entire life in New Hampshire until I went away for college. And now I've been training and prepping for the pro league.
So tell me where you are right now.
So currently I'm in Rockford, Illinois. I am working for Baseball for All, and we're putting on the largest girls youth baseball tournament in the country. So it's the same time right now as the Women's Baseball World Cup, which is also in town, which has six teams all across the world with the best female baseball players. But we have 900 girls playing baseball in our tournament this week.
That's a lot of athletes in one spot.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, okay, so you obviously are very busy with this, but at the same time, you're getting ready to start up and play in this new league starting up on, I think it's in August, right?
Yes, this event for Baseball for All just happens to be kind of the week before I'm supposed to report to Springfield, Illinois for spring training for the Women's Pro League. Our first games will be the first week in August.
So tell me about the names of the four inaugural teams here that are starting up in the league. They're all inspired by trailblazing American women from the 19th and 20th centuries, all of it tied to baseball. Tell us about the Boston Hunters.
Yeah, so the Boston Hunters are named after Harriet Hunt. She was really famously known for trying to apply to Harvard multiple times and kind of getting told no. And so she went on to still practice medicine and be super impactful kind of in that space for women's health and also just women's rights in general. I think she's super representative, just kind of being told no and doing it anyway and kind of pushing the needle forward. So super proud to represent her and kind of the history of that within Boston and New England. I mean, some of the other players who are local to the New England area are people that I've been playing with for at least since, I think, 2018, so for the last 8 years. You have Maggie Fox playing for the Los Angeles Queens. She's from Bedford, New Hampshire, which is pretty awesome. You also have players like Jackie Reynolds, who grew up, she's playing for the New York Heights. She grew up in Woburn, Mass, and still lives in Woburn, Mass. So we have a lot of New England love in the league this season.
So tell me about where the league's games are going to be played this year.
Yeah, so all of our games for the first season are going to be played at a neutral site in Springfield, Illinois. So it's just, I think, an opportunity. We're representing four cities. So we have San Francisco, New York, Los Angeles, and Boston. Most importantly, Boston. But for the first year, that's a lot of travel. I think they want to put us in one place for the first year just so that we can kind of get things right, make sure we're treating the players the right way, make sure we're, kind of make sure everyone's taken care of that first year. And try to have success building fan bases, doing that. And then hopefully we get enough support kind of throughout this season that we're able to expand next year and travel a bit more and kind of go to those cities, see more of those fans and kind of build off of that.
Yeah, it'd be really fun to see a game played at Fenway, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would be amazing. I had the opportunity a couple of weeks ago, to throw out the first pitch. And I remember going out there. First of all, that was incredible just because I grew up a Red Sox fan. And as a little kid, I don't know, there was no women's professional baseball league, so I just dreamed of playing for the Boston Red Sox and playing at Fenway. And so I walking out there to go throw out the first pitch, I was just taking it in, and I was like, wow, I can't wait for us to play in a place like this and to have the stands packed with fans and just to be excited about women's baseball.
New Hampshire's Beth Greenwood is the new catcher for the Boston Hunters. Beth, thanks for the time, and good luck.
Yeah, thank you. Very excited.
If you missed part of today's segment or if you want to catch up on previous weeks, you can find the New Hampshire News Recap wherever you happen to listen to podcasts. I'm Rick Ganley, and this is NHPR.